You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
This is the second part of the episode, and in this part, we have invited one or more guest experts to share their best advice to Marie from Zebra Apps. Your hosts today are AK
and Ivana.
And for this episode, we have invited a guest speaker to discuss the story part. Welcome to Dr. Ross Worth. You help organizations with design of their organizational structures and self-organization, and you write on your LinkedIn that you help align people's passions with an entrepreneurial spirit. And we would like to hear you elaborate a little bit on this and what it is that you do.
Right. I'm in the area of new thinking on organizations, how they're led, and even change itself. Many organizations struggle with the legacy of an industrial era, and too often they complain without searching the alternatives of what some pioneering organizations are doing. So we're trying to investigate what is possible, but then from that generalize so that they become principles that others can actually use. So we're really spearheading that synthesis of the possibilities and figuring out how to then close the gap between basically what too many people dislike versus what they would really like in a workplace.
Thank you so much. And that is also one of the reasons we're so happy to have you on the show, because we're all about closing that that gap between what can be done and what is actually happening in organizations today.
Yes.
As we start our conversation, we would like to check in, all three of us. And the question that we would like to check in on today is if each of us could share one event that led us to the professional path that we're currently on.
Okay.
All right, I can start. So I've been thinking about this today a lot, and which event to choose, because of course there's been a few different things leading me to where I am today. But I did go way back and picked the event that in my first corporate job, when I was a student assistant for a large Danish company, one of my very first tasks was to work with a tool for benefit realization. So how do you make sure that the business actually harvests the benefits of a project in IT when it's closed? And that was a really hard assignment coming straight. Oh, I was still in university at the time. And something I realized during this assignment was that I realized how many, if not all, benefits of at least IT projects are dependent on human behavior, and how important it is to focus on the people side of change when we do projects. And that's really how I found out about change management in the first place, and how I got into working in that field, and kind of tried to go that direction in the organization after my first assignment.
Okay. I went into international oil and gas right out of school, where I had received an MBA. And I've progressed through many different parts of the organization, really working everywhere from IT to HR, supply and distribution, marketing, oftentimes in a planning role where I was exposed to a lot of the top leaders, as well as what was new in the industry and new in business in general. What I found, though, is after 25 years, my education had gotten stale. I had kept up with a lot of the practice, but I had not kept up with the new theories that were being kicked around. And I'm a strong believer on practice the theory to practice that relationship. So I decided to get some more formal education. I was lucky that the company had a very generous education reimbursement. And after looking around at different types of programs, I decided not to go for another master's, but to go for a doctorate degree. And since I was doing so much work in and around change already, I decided to focus in that area. That then opened up many additional doors at the company as to leading even more internal change initiatives. That also opened up a second career when I went into academia and taught there for a while, later becoming dean of the College of Business. I'm now, though, in my third career, basically relocating for grandchildren, as many people my age might understand.
That is an amazing development, for sure. I'll just share a short story. One of the very first jobs that I had out of university, I feel like that's a common theme we have here, going back to the first job. One of the first jobs I worked for was a software company that developed software for the defense industry. And I was straight out of university, where we had learned about, I am a behavioral economist, we learned about different tools for group dynamics. But at this very first job, I met my very first Scrum board. It was located in my office because that's where the space was for the team that was adjacent to me. They just put it in the office where I sat. And I just remember seeing it and being like, wow, this is what practice looks like. I've seen all the theory, but this is what how work is actually being coordinated with these post-its on this whiteboard. And that kind of led my whole interest into, well, how do we work in teams? How do we create agility in organizations? It was that meeting with that first Scrum board.
So simple and so powerful. That sounds great. And also, Ross, sounds really good that you've moved for your grandchildren. I hope my mom is listening to this and getting inspired.
you definitely need help with the first child.
Yes.
We are so excited to start this conversation with you. First off, I would be very curious to hear more about what do you think about the reading that was sent your way, but also if you could describe your takeaway from what this section of the story is about.
I find it a very interesting storyline. I can see a lot of similarity to other situations I've been involved with. I am a little bit surprised at Marie to some extent in the role that she has and how ill-prepared that she is and how many mistakes that she makes along the way. That's not to say I haven't seen those mistakes, but generally in the role of someone who is being put in the position that she's occupying would be expected to have a little bit more capability than she is showing. It's almost like what too many companies do is they lead change based upon their personal experiences. And oftentimes they either are working more on what they don't like from their previous experiences and are hoping for the best and don't properly think through the process and how the dynamics are at play.
Actually, I have the same note for this episode about, I was surprised by some of the things Marie did and didn't think about, especially like when that the leadership team so easily bought into the culture program and she didn't get suspicious. Like I just thought, come on, like, are you sure they know what they said yes to? Obviously they did not.
Well, I actually saw that once though, where the president and CEO called together a group, probably 1,000 people in a huge ballroom in Las Vegas, presented the plan and basically left the meeting on, we're going to do this, everyone, rah, rah, let's go. And absolutely nothing happened whatsoever. I mean, zero action happened after enormous expense of bringing people all together from all over the United States to a location for a multi-day conference. But again, nothing happened, but basically everyone left the meeting thinking that they were actually in agreement when they weren't.
Exactly. Yeah. Such a really good point.
Yep.
I would be curious to hear when you were reading through this, what did you think Marie should have done?
That's really hard to say because there's so many points.
Well, we can start in
let me start with the most basic.
Sounds good.
She's constantly discovering things that she already should have known. Mm. The dynamics that are underway in the organization. She seems kind of blindsided. Her interaction with Jacques in the breakout room surprised me, given that she's been coaching him. And she didn't know any of that activity. She jumped right into an earlier episode of benchmarking without even thinking what should be benchmarked. She takes other people's recommendations without really thinking through what the recommendation means and how to do it. She did that in a couple cases. And then when she actually gets to the planning of the breakout, multiple errors there. She does it as a half day offsite. Mm. She's got a fair location with the forest and the beach, not bad. But then she doesn't take advantage of the forest or the beach. She uses a meeting room combination. She prepares a best case plan and does not deviate from that plan. A critical point is when they start getting the groups together, things start blow up. Mm. There's some conflict. I mean, that's a perfect point at that point to throw out the plan and deal with that, because that's the heart of the issue. Instead, she basically puts the fire out and suppresses it so the conflict doesn't go away. And then she goes into individual breakouts that I don't understand at all. You're trying to build a team, and you can't build a team by breaking them apart and then bringing them together. The activities of breaking them apart should have been done before the event. Okay, that's the type of thing that you do before meeting. It's like a lawyer. A lawyer never asks a question in a courtroom that the answer is not known. Mm. In this case, you may not know every possibility, but you should know a number of them and the scenarios and how you would play it out. She didn't do any of that, nor did she take advantage of a serendipity situation that was laid right before her, where she could have dealt with the heart of the issue. Mm. Then, okay, the location, not bad, again, but the timing. She does a half day in a morning. The CFO shows up in a suit and tie at an offsite. That makes no sense whatsoever. Okay, so basically they were planning to do a half day and then go into the office for the afternoon. And you basically start off with a kind of a short icebreaker, you might say, but it's really not a good icebreaker. It's just kind of we're gathering. And then you immediately jump into the breakout rooms. A much better approach, and one I've used with a lot of success, is you do a multi-day event, but you always start the night before, and you start with dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and you start socializing. And that first night is basically socializing with maybe a half hour to an hour, but that half hour to an hour kind of deals with it's like an icebreaker where you figure out where people are, where they see the issues that need to be addressed. That doesn't need to be done formally. We've done that around campfires. Mm. We've also done that around bowling, where you bring the people together. Nobody bowls good. Everyone makes fun of everybody. But again, it's the socialization. And then you start off with breakfast. And you get into the meeting. But again, every meal is a team building activity, and she didn't do any of that. So that was a great missed opportunity there.
I love the way that you outline the issues and how she could have done things better. I think also this speaks to that she continuously keeps underestimating the work that is ahead of her and not really understanding the implications of what she's starting to do.
Yeah, she's clueless as to the challenge and even the approach that she's taking.
I would like to dive into the missed opportunity, because I think that's a really good point. In the first session that they have, when the other leaders start challenging Natalie and the values, I assume that is the one that you're referring to. Maybe we can unpack that a little bit. How could she have caught that opportunity and gotten something constructive out of that?
Okay, it started off very confrontational. Mm. The president, Natalie, was very defensive. But Natalie then got up and basically gave a short history of the company. And that was a great point to be able to start from. Now, when Natalie got done with that, she basically sat down, crossed her arms, and disassociated again. The point that Marie missed, though, is that she basically took that as the end of the exchange and went to her plan again. Hmm. What she should have done is deviated and basically reopened up the issue of, what do you think about what Richard and Natalie did? Okay,
yeah.
Is there still a basis of that in place? And just open it up for discussion. Because what's happened to the company was they started off with a very clear values and a very clear purpose. Their strategy failed, and they basically went without a strategy to some extent of basically short-term profit-making for survival. Okay. So they're now faced with a short-term survival. The people are voting with their feet, both leaving and joining. They're facing multiple problems. It's not just cultural. They don't have a clear purpose anymore. Their values have been pushed aside. They do have some values in action, but they're not clarified, nor are they understood of whether they want those values or not. And they don't have, for the third part, a clear strategy. So all three of those items need to be talked about. And the way that Natalie set up this exchange would be the perfect jumping off point at that point. So what Marie should have done was to basically have, she had three people with her. She should have had one person bring out the flip chart to where they were and basically, start the meeting right there at that point with the flip chart. Send a second person out to catering to bring in more coffee, soft drinks, and snacks, whatever. So and keep it informal, and send the third person back to the office, probably to get as much as they can quickly as to what customers are saying and what the employees exit, and bring that back on site as soon as possible so they could then hear from the customer, hear from the departing employees, and use that as a continuation of the conversation at that point. And then basically facilitate it around the values, the purpose, and the strategy, and focus it not too much to get an agreement on those three things, as much as it is to get a team built around those three things.
Mm. Yeah, good point. I also wrote a note about how she actually knew before this offsite that Richard was joining their competitor. So if it was me, I would have scheduled time with Natalie right away before, like just 5-10 minutes before in the morning, to make sure that we kind of talk about, okay, so this press release is out. Is happening. How are we going to address this at today's meeting? Because obviously Natalie was very offended in the beginning of the meeting. And I feel like it was a very toxic way she kind of ended that whole history story, where she ended up saying something about how Richard just tossed that all in the bin and moved on or something. And then that was kind of the the atmosphere that was kicking off the whole thing. So I think it would have been better to kind of agree on how maybe we should talk about, like, what, why did Richard leave? Why is that a problem? Now he's joining the competitor. What does that mean? And so on. So to talk, as you say, address the conflict more.
Yeah, address the conflict. And again, at that point, Natalie has really set it up perfect. I mean, the original purpose, the original values, the vision at that point was reignited. It was put on the table for discussion. Marie had a perfect opportunity to say, well, what's wrong with that vision? Can we go back to it? Can we modify it? Any number of ways you could go with the conversation to regenerate some excitement and bring people together for a common understanding.
Exactly. And also something else you said in the beginning, Ross, you said that that Marie is not curious, which is so ironic because one of the values is curiosity. So that just really speaks to how she hasn't really understood what this exercise is about in the first place, or at least it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. Well, you go back to the original session where the culture change plan was agreed upon. You basically had the same thing here happen, where everybody basically agreed that the values were correct other than Frank. Frank was probably the only one that was speaking truthfully. Everyone else was basically passive aggressive with compliant just to move on.
Mm. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm also curious, what do you read in the outcome of the session? They went into their separate sessions. We do follow what happens to Jack, but then we have this episode where Frank storms out.
Actually, Frank storming out doesn't surprise me at all. I'm surprised that they all didn't storm out. I mean, you know, think about this. I mean, you've got a bunch of, you're in a very hierarchical traditional organization, which means you've got a lot of power difference in play. And you put the senior people be confronted with the junior person. I mean, that's just not going to work. Okay. And then you put them in a one-on-one confrontational situation. I'm surprised that Sheila was the only one, you know, that was crying. I mean, you put these junior people in a very, very bad situation, and all you're doing is you're encouraging that power difference without any release. I mean, it's going to blow. And then you bring them together, and you basically have a group of people that just want to get the heck out of there. You know, and they will say whatever they need to be able to close the session. And they basically all agree that the values are good to go and let's go back to work type of thing. So nothing was accomplished at that point. If there was a positive takeaway, well, let me back up. Okay. You basically probably made things worse, not only in putting a culture plan up for a change, as well as this particular breakout session that focused on values. You probably made things worse because you've ingrained the defensiveness, the internal conflicts that were in place without really making any positive steps forward. If there was a positive step, I would say it's actually Jacques, in that he said some interesting things that Marie should have already have known from her coaching activities. Mm. And it surprised me that she did not. But Jacques' attitude of not liking the self-management and wanting to leave, I think he's coming to the realization that it's not all he thought it would be. Mm. And this is true. People put a lot of faith in positional power, but rarely is positional power ever sufficient. Generally, it has to be supported with personal powers of one type or another. And he was trying to use position of power only. That's why he left one company to come to this second company. He's now become dissatisfied, realizing it's not working. And he's got some opening of what is possible. So to me, he could easily be turned to be a real champion of a culture change. But at the same time, I'm surprised that Marie didn't already know this from her coaching sessions. I would probably also start from Marie's standpoint on getting on board with Mark, because Mark also is one that actually left his previous company because he couldn't do a self-managed. So he's got an interest also. So that's two key people that have some knowledge and desire for self-management, but they're not being groomed to be a champion of the process. You've also got some upward management needed with Natalie. Natalie seems to be defeated. She seems really to be down and alone.
Why do you say that?
The way she's defensive at the end, and she's angry at Richard having abandoned her and basically leaving her in charge of a mess. So she's angry there. She also sees Richard possibly now in a new company getting what they originally wanted with this company.
Yeah.
So she's upset there. So she's alone, defensive, and not really knowing what to do. And then she's got a staff that may be competent, but they're not working together, primarily because they don't know what the vision is. They don't know what the purpose that they're all trying to accomplish and how they're going to get there. So she could use some coaching. And to some extent, Mark may be doing that, but Marie needs to have a conversation with Mark about the dynamics that are in place. And between the two of them, figure out an approach of how to take advantage of those dynamics and identify which dynamics are beneficial, which ones are harmful, and work through that before you try to bring them all back together again. Once everybody has a common understanding on what is possible and where the issues are, then put together an offsite retreat, but do it right. Not try to do it quickly at a half day morning session.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also, during this half day session, if something does happen to Natalie, she decides not to sue Richard after all. Why do you think she changed her mind?
Well, I think it started off as a knee-jerk reaction that it surprised her, and I think it reinforced the abandonment feelings that she had. It also resurfaced the vision that she had that she's not getting. So I think that brought a lot of defensiveness. Then after having basically released some of that pressure with her, really as a heartfelt discussion on where she and Richard were earlier, I think that would have released some of that pressure. And then probably to the extent that in the breakout session she had with Mark to revisit the values, probably reinforced back basically the vision that she wanted and realized that she's not getting it. And by Richard leaving isn't necessarily meaning that that he was a failure, she was at fault. It's just that that's past, and you can't change the past by suing somebody, particularly when there's no contract in place, there's no real issues involved. So by getting your pound of flesh, you don't really accomplish anything. It just makes it worse. I think she came to that realization.
I think that's a really good point. Then after the offsite, we have a situation where the CFO decides to retire. What do you make of that?
I don't think it really surprised me at all. He did not see himself as a fit, but again, that could be said probably by everybody at the executive level. They don't fit with others. To the extent that there's any coalitions, it's a matter of convenience, not a matter of commitment to one another. To some extent, given that their strategy is basically short-term financials, he's probably feeling some stress there. And to the extent that all they're doing is hiring sales and putting effort on sales, I'm not sure he sees success in that area. So if he steps back and looks at what's coming down the road from a CFO perspective, is probably not a very good vision. And he has to decide, is it time to basically retire and walk away from a mess versus getting into that quagmire and struggling, and then even then may not be successful.
I like how you put it, that this leadership team, they're in fact all alone, and they're not committed to one another. So we have these people who need to work together, but they're just very separated.
And then they're even more separated in individual facilitation groups. So that's a good point before. Would have made more sense to bring them together.
Yeah, and again, this is where Marie really missed an opportunity on bringing them together over a meal to get to know each other.
I wanted to get back to your comments on self-organization, because I know you work with this, and I think it was really interesting what you said in terms of Jack's own process when he had like his experiences with the self-organization from previously. So just to hear your perspectives on what do you think is needed to be successful with self-organization?
I would start off with a conversation with Jacques over the five levels of involvement. Okay. What he wants is level one involvement, telling people what to do and them doing it. Okay. He's discovering that that does not work, which makes sense. And nobody likes being told what to do. Okay. And most change initiatives start with that as an idea. Okay. But they realize that telling people what to do is not the path forward, so they go to level two involvement, which is selling. And most change communication is built around selling the change plan. They're selling the change plan to people that have been left out of the sense-making process, that have not had any input into it, and may resist not so much for valid reasons as much as what's being overlooked by the change team, because the change team did not involve them earlier, which brings levels three and four. Levels three is testing ideas on people. Level four is consulting with them for their input to the process. To the extent that you test and you consult, you're bringing people into the process, but you're still not at level five. Level five is co-creation. And that's where self-management really is, in that you're pushing the issues down into the organization so that they are developing their own solutions to the problems that they are facing. And to the extent that they are co-involved, they then have total ownership of it. They understand the problem better, and they are at that point champion the change, because they developed the change. It's not being pushed upon them. So it becomes a shift also from controlling the process to facilitating the process. It's a different approach. And that's where too often where Jacques was. He wanted to control the process versus facilitate the process. But I think with some understanding of those five levels of involvement, he can then understand that it's not so much the destination that's critical as it is the direction. And by putting a process in place, he could then have the organization move in the desired direction and influence that without necessarily getting to the where he might think. So, for example, and this is where students in school often struggle. They are taught that there is one right answer to a problem. Okay. In business, rarely, if ever, is there one right answer. There's many good answers, but every good answer has at least one problem associated with it. And oftentimes, the choice between multiple good answers is one of values and judgment. But the outcome between those good answers oftentimes isn't that marginally different. And if it's moving in the direction you want, are you really that concerned about, is it your choice or is it a good enough choice? So with a little coaching, Jacques could understand that and be an advocate. And probably Mark brought on board also because he wants to do some of the self-management, but I'm not sure to the degree that he understands what self-management is. And again, that's an opportunity for Marie to better understand his experiences in his previous company and what challenges he had in there, because those would be the same challenges faced here.
That was a good, really good way to put it. I love these five levels of involvement. Are there any other methodologies or theoretical models that you thought about while you were reading this?
Well, tightly associated with that is the change process itself that people go through. Okay, a lot of times people use the Lewin approach, which is the unfreeze, change, freeze, refreeze. That is a very simplistic model, and it overlooks Schein's contribution of it basically being a learning process. You have to change. You have to unlearn what you think. It's when your head. It's in your head. To the extent that you don't understand things, you basically discard it. The relearning process is how to change what you understand, why you understand it, the way it is. This also gets then to how you involve people in the problem solving, and that it's not just bringing them in the choice, it's bringing them in the sense making, the options that are identified, the criteria for choosing the choice, the actual choice itself, and then how you finally implement that choice. These are all different ways of bringing people into the process. These are all theoretically based and understood, that are easily understood with simple diagrams, and that you could bring them on board, but you don't do it in a shotgun approach, everyone together. You do a lot of preparation work beforehand to find out where the issues are, where people see the challenges, figure out how to address those challenges beforehand so you don't run into problems later. Part of this is a saying that's often encountered in change, and that you have to go slow early to go fast later. If you go fast too much in the earlier part, which is exactly what Marie did here, she went fast in her change program. Now she's got to go slow because of the mistakes that were made. Had there been better planning up front, better involvement of the key people, they can then go faster later because the team would have been built. The team's not in place, so you can't go fast now.
That is such a good point. And I'm also really interested to see what will happen when these values are launched or like relaunched to the rest of the company, because right now it's just a leadership group, which we know is really important to get them on board and aligned. But now she doesn't have a united leadership team. And we must assume that the next thing that will happen is the town hall where the values are being relaunched. So
you got multiple opportunities, but it's almost as if you're at the very beginning, but things are worse because of the mistakes that have been made.
Rush, what do you think happens from here? I mean, are things going to get worse?
I think it depends. The way it was left is a forecast of it getting worse, but I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. If you continue to suppress the conflict, it could get worse, particularly if you suppress the conflict and then bring more employees in, because that conflict can then boil over publicly among all employees. And at that point, it's basically everybody then sees the dysfunction for what it is. And if you've got an opportunity anywhere, you jump on it. And if you don't have an opportunity, you start finding them now. Because once it becomes public, the amount of dysfunction at that level of the organization, the downward spiral is only going to be increased. To the extent that you start to build team building, you start to do working better between Marie and Mark on the HR side, working with Natalie to reinforce what the vision is, and then start to do some small group, like one or two people together on the executive level to figure out where people are, then they can basically have the foundation then to do a better offsite. To the extent that you have a better offsite, I think some of the conflict that was foretold at the end can be avoided, because at that point you've basically addressed the conflict and you started to build a team so that things don't blow up later.
Let's hope that is what happens and they de-escalate.
Well, it's hard to say. So far, Marie shows no inclination of going that route. Mm.
I must also ask you, and that'll be my last question for now. Marie drops some cinnamon buns down a stairwell, and then she does not go back for them.
I don't know what to make of that. It's kind of interesting, though, is that there's trash at the bottom of the stairwell. Everyone seems to know about the trash that's there, which is kind of curious, in that this is their working environment with trash at the bottom, and now you're going to have mice and rats infesting the area. That may be part of the culture also that I'd have to add at some point. What kind of working environment do we really have and do we want?
Yeah, good point. I do think we have to wrap up now. So, Ross, it's been an absolute pleasure. We want to ask you if our listeners want to reach out to you, is there any way they can find you?
They can reach me on LinkedIn. I'm there regularly. Or they can join my effort hosting these types of conversations at futocracy.network. That's FUTOCRACY, futocracy.network. It's where we are trying to examine the pioneering organizations and generalizing the principles. What we're finding is that no one organization has it all right, but collectively the answer is there. Though there are a few challenges here and there that we need to address. The pioneering companies, though, for the most part, are either startups that have that as a value, or they're a mature organization that faced a crisis. Hmm. So the company here may be heading that direction. They're facing a crisis, and this may be the way out of that crisis. Yeah. What's really missing is a path for mature organizations that are struggling with dysfunctions, but haven't yet reached that crisis. That's the majority of companies, and they struggle making the transition to self-management because it's not yet critical that they do so. They haven't faced that crisis of being put out of business unless they do something different. And that's where we're trying to work with Futocracy right now, is how to get the word out so the more people can understand that it doesn't have to be the way it is, and that you don't necessarily have to jump to a full end state. There's many things you could do as interim steps that get you closer to being a more knowledge era organization than industrial era organization.
That sounds so interesting. I will definitely have a look at that network. Okay. Would love to learn more.
Yeah, a lot more. And again, we're kind of making a shift now. We started off evaluating why organizations fail to change. And we discovered that it's not so much to change models. We don't need a new change model. What the challenge is that the organizations that we design are built for stability. Mm. They're built to fight change. And if we want to change an organization's designed not to change, that's the problem. And that it's not organization change itself, it's the relationship between organization change and organization design. Mm. And how you design the pieces of an organization so that they are more adaptable for change. And a critical part of this is really the power and the authority and how that's managed in an organization and how people are treated. Okay, these are all critical things that are really values. But again, once you talk about those values, then you start to think that, you know, are you designing the organization for controlling people, or are you designing the organization for producing work? And too often we control the workers. We don't produce an environment for the production of work. Okay, very different attitude. It's a mindset issue. Mm. But again, when you look at these pioneer organizations, a lot of what they do is they look at control very different.
Absolutely agree. And I feel like that could be a whole different avenue we could have explored in this episode. And maybe
so.
We'll have to return to that.
I was about to say, we have to bring you in again. But then I also thought, send our listeners to your network.
I'm interested to see how this story evolves and the decisions that Marie makes going forward.
Yeah, well, same here. Well, thank you so much, Ross. This was a very big pleasure.
Okay, my pleasure, and looking forward to watching to see how this evolves.
You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
What are your thoughts on Marie's situation? Have you had a similar experience? And what would you have done? Join the conversation on our LinkedIn page and let's maneuver Mondays together.